Hey, welcome back, everybody. Time to grab your board and surf along with the One Family. They're not surfing the internet, dreaming and going out in the world. They're doing it. So put your books down and grab your bags. Let's go and see if we can find the All Over the Map family as they travel the world with their kids in search of their forever home. Well, let's turn the radio dial and see if we can dial them in. I need one of those sounds like, where we're going up and down the dial here, trying to look for the right signal. Come in, Michael and Caitlin Domner. Are you there?
Hey, we are here, still in Buenos Aires for one more week before we head back to the United States for a little sabbatical.
So is staying any place? You seem sort of sedate this week. Normally, you're ready to move. We're here, but we're going tomorrow. We've been here a week and we're ready to travel. You're kind of like settled in here or is this just the calm before the storm?
Yeah, we actually thought about going to Uruguay, but you know what? It just, as we were looking at the days getting fewer and fewer before we headed out to the United States, and we met our friends that you met last week, Roy and Carrie, and decided, you know what, maybe we'll just hang out here, catch up on school, catch up on work, take a couple more tango lessons and just relax and kind of catch up before we head back to the States. Because I think when we get back to the States, it'll be a whirlwind of its own. Like we'll be wanting to hang out with family all day and soaking up every minute with them. And so things like work and school, I'm afraid, are going to get pushed to the back burner pretty easily if we're not careful.
Yeah.
I agree. I think it's smart to do that. But I smile because usually you can't wait to go where you're going. And Michael just sighed, went like, almost like, oh, it's kind of nice just to sit still.
We've really had this last week has been great. Just kind of spending time here at the apartment with the kids, getting school done, getting work done. I feel like we've accomplished more work in the last week than we probably did in 60 days before that. So it's been nice.
Yeah, there you
and
go.
I realize it's been about 90 days since we had our last sort of breather when we were in Quito, Ecuador.
Right.
And that's when, again, we were in the same city in a very nice apartment for 4 weeks, just living abroad, not traveling. And so it makes me think that maybe there's kind of a quarterly rhythm that every 3 months we just sort of get winded and need to catch our breath for a second.
Well, and that's the theme of today's show. You know, we're at the end of season one here. We're coming to the close of your first adventure where you traveled out into the country and then crossed the border and kept going south until you couldn't go any further. You ran down to the farthest peninsula in South America and jumped off to Antarctica. Now what? And now you're sort of back going, okay, what do we do? We're going to go back to home, or we're going to go back to where we started and sort of check in, regroup, rethink, retool, and decide not just where we go next, but how we do it. That was what the lesson I heard of the family last week. There are different ways to do this.
We've kind of been cataloging what we've learned over the last 2 months or so, or 6 months, 7 months. Just kind of what are we going to do different when we get home? What are we going to not take anymore? What are we going to leave behind? What are we going to purge? And so that's been an interesting process, kind of thinking through that and trying to be strategic about it.
So that'll be the theme of the next few shows as you come back and regroup. I think there's two things I want to know as you return to the country. As you come back in from the cold, it's an old Cold War analogy, the spy who came in from the cold, he was out in the Cold War behind, the enemy lines, and now he finally comes back home. What does it feel like to come back? Is it still home? Were you just on a grand adventure, or have you really left? I think that'll be one of the things, you know, is this the new normal or was that just a wonderful extended adventure? What do you think about it?
That was one of the things I really enjoyed talking with Roy and Carrie last week about. They're to the point now, they've been doing it for four, almost 5 years, and they've decided that they can't imagine what it would be like to go back and not have the next place that they're going. And I can definitely feel that the attractiveness of that prospect, right? Just not being sure where we're headed next month, having kind of an open book in the future instead of settling down to a quote unquote normal life, right?
But on the other hand, the kids keep talking about the ranch, which is kind of our placeholder for the Forever Home, right? Which is
I never heard of that. They call it the ranch. Okay, they have a name for it.
They call it the ranch. So when we're at the ranch, can we get a PlayStation? When we're at the ranch, I'm going to own border collies. That's Cora's obsession. And so she wants to raise border collies and sell the puppies so she can raise money to get a horse and an aquarium. Like, she has this whole plan that, like, it's dominoes that she needs to do. And so it's clear to me that the kids are still on board with this being a temporary lifestyle.
Right.
Because they're looking forward to a place where they can have pets and play video games again, right? Like,
right.
So there's still definitely, it's a season of life right now for what they're looking at.
Yes, yeah. Right. And I think that's one of the big epiphanies. The last family that you had on, you wandered into one of these other wandering nomads, and they've been doing longer. And they started off on that same sort of thing. Let's go see the world for a while and figure out what comes next. And then the wife said the thing that shocked all of us. She said, when he said, well, so should we go home? And she says, please, God, no. It was like, oh, my God. Like, that was because that seems like.
Don't make me go back to normal.
Don't make me go back to normal. That was what she said. And I thought, wow, we all just, I'm never going to forget that line. Because we all want to go back to normal at some point. Isn't that the human condition? To get back home, to settle down, to find that comfortable place, that comfortable chair, that place where I can grow my nest and everything. That's supposed to be the American dream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So I think that'll be one of the big things. How does it feel to come back? And does it make you long to do this more? Because the other thing, then she talked about there's another way to do it, which is they ran into some other couple in the other part of the world, and they have base
multiple homes.
Yeah, home bases.
Yeah.
A base camp. So that you go there, you set up, you have your stuff, and then you explore from there, and then you come back to the base camp. Regroup, retool. That's where your supplies are. That's where you feel safe. And then you go, you use that as a point of adventure. When we're going to space, we're talking about, do we build a base on the moon? And from there, we start to explore the stars. That's probably what we'll do. You could do the same thing. You could have these little base camps set up around the world here.
Yeah, I think that's one of the lessons that we've really taken from our last 7 months, is just living slower, moving less, and using that home base idea. That's going to be hypothesis number two for season two. We all over the map family adventure. So we booked our airline tickets to Thailand, and using points, it was only $180 for all five of us to go.
Yeah,
to
that's something we'll have to, once we're back at home and we're doing kind of the things that we've learned. I realized that we booked our tickets to Thailand. We saved 90% on them by using points to buy them. So there is definitely, I mean, it was like $2,000 in savings. So there's definitely a benefit to using a credit card, earning points.
Yeah.
There's whole genres of, I think there's a points guy that you can follow. They'll tell you all the secrets of it. I don't claim to be a master of it, but just recognizing now, like, even though it took us a year or two to save up those points, like, it saved us $2,000 this month. Yeah. So it's just, it's very real to, like, wow, it can work.
And not that I want to turn you into that kind of show, but there are tangible tips. I wonder if there aren't better cards or worse cards, or I'm endlessly getting emails. These are the best cards to accumulate points. They have the largest system. They have the biggest payoffs. And there is a sub-market for that whole world of finding cards that will really accumulate quickly here. And then
and one thing I didn't realize, but we were kind of educated to, was that the airlines themselves kind of clump themselves into alliances.
Yes.
And so there's three main alliances. And so our guy told us to do one credit card for each of the three alliances.
And then wherever you're going, there's probably an alliance member where you can either earn points or use the points to go anywhere in the world if you have points in each of the three alliances. Yeah.
Well, as people,
so that was a helpful tip.
So as people follow you, I know we're just telling the stories here, but I know you're going to eventually plan to create books and seminars and other things. There'll be other things that you'll share, these practical tips and these practical guides of these, I always call them sort of mommy blogger tips or travel blogger tips, of things to take with you and things to do and how to prepare and security and finances. It's just a lot. We just sort of run through it. That the point of this show is really just to kind of tell your human story and the evolution you're going through. We vicariously ride along, and then we also maybe learn something along the way about ourselves. What does home mean? What does the American dream mean for all of us? I think there are some bigger themes and takeaways from the show. At least I hope so. Well, any other thoughts as you head home? One is, how's it going to feel? Where are you going to stay? You're not staying in your own house.
Yeah, so that's a big question. My mom's letting us stay at her house in San Diego because she has enough rooms for us, but nobody else has enough rooms.
I don't have enough room. Don't come over here.
If it was just me and Caitlin, we could sleep on a couch somewhere, but it's tough when you got five of you to find somewhere to stay.
Right. Yeah.
And we actually had an Airbnb booked in Apple Valley, which is kind of the other primary place we wanted to go. But I just got a notice yesterday saying that the owner canceled it. They said the listing was incorrect or something like that. So
now we're scrambling, and a friend was like, well, I've got a trailer with four beds in it. I was like, all right, well, we have a worst case.
Might be living there. Yeah.
I think we mentioned this, like, it's shocking going back to the United States and having to pay for things in US dollars. Even Apple Valley, which has historically been this little podunk town, it's like,
send your nasty letters to the Domner family from Apple Valley. I didn't call it a podunk town here. Beautiful place.
But it's like $150 a night, which around the world, that's like triple what we're usually paying for something that's even nicer.
Literally here in Buenos Aires, we're in a nice 3-bedroom apartment and it's $50 a night. And it's in the middle of one of the nicest neighborhoods, Recoleta. So it's just a culture shock going back to the U.S. and realizing, holy cow, it's so expensive.
Yeah.
I can see why people that are doing the traveling in the U.S. buy trailers and stay in the trailers, because you can pick up a campsite for $20 or $30 a night and stay in your trailer and it's not that bad. But if you're using hotels or Airbnbs, you're talking $150 to $200 a night, depending on where you're at.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you will see that in the 6 months you've been gone or so, we've gone through an inflationary surge like I haven't seen since the 1980s, when everything went from this to this. You know, when I was a kid, a car was $1,500, and in a couple of years, it went to $15,000. When I was a kid, a house was a really nice house was $50,000, and pretty soon it went to $500,000. And now it's, you know, doubled again.
Now it's $1 million or two. My son, who's 19 in the United States still, Nathan, he was looking for a car a couple months ago, and I sent him a clipping that I saw from like a 1967 Chevy ad for a brand new Chevelle. I think it was $3,700 for a brand new Chevelle. I was like, here, just buy one of these. Now you can't buy a brand new car for less than almost 20 grand. It's crazy.
Used cars have jumped up because the supply is supply and demand here. Everything's been, you know, we all went a year or two, we couldn't get anything and didn't buy anything, and now it's like coming back from the war. Suddenly everybody wants everything right now, and everything's in short supply. Well, I think that will be, it'd be interesting. The only time I always say I've ever gone through what you've gone through, but a couple times I took what to me were exotic trips, and one was to Belize. I mentioned it one time. I just got on a plane, and I'm up in the jungle with a buddy. And when it came back, there was almost like, it was very disconcerting. The traffic was fast. The conversation was loud. The pace of life, not just the expense, but everything was crowded and rushed again. And I was in, it was like the few times when I would go to New York. It just feels like everybody's on crack. I mean, everything is moving hyper fast. And there's just, you go out in the street and there's a million people around you and they're all just racing. And it's 3 o'clock in the morning and there's still a million people on the street. If you're in that day after day, you get used to it, like driving the freeways here in LA. But I wonder when you come back how that's going to feel.
I feel like we've had especially because we've spent these last couple of weeks here in Buenos Aires, which is a huge metropolis of 16 million plus people. I feel like, I don't know that will be a big shock as far as kind of pace. But if we had come back from Antarctica,
Calafate, coming back to Buenos Aires, it was.
It's a shock to go from nobody to all of a sudden surrounded by 16 million people.
Yeah,
right?
That was not a fun shock. But I think going to the U.S., it might actually be
Might actually feel a little bit slower because we're going to San Diego and Apple Valley.
Yeah. Right.
Podunk, according to
Podunk. Podunk. We're going to Podunk. We're going to... Well, so I think all of that is, you know, how do you feel when you've come back home? Is it still home? And will you still refer to it as home? That was, to me, the real key when we moved around the country. When I stopped calling the last place home, I knew we have moved. We'd go back to visit them. They'd say, when are you coming home? And I'd always cringe. This isn't my home anymore. My home's somewhere else.
Yeah. I think coming back may be a changing point for that because we're going to realize we don't have a home, right? So we have somebody else's renting in our house. It's not like we're going back to our house with our stuff that feels like home. We're going back to possibly stay in a trailer in somebody's backyard. And so that may help kind of get rid of that feeling of that's home and we're just traveling away from home it'll be really interesting to see how that plays out.
Well, and then again, you're going to, there's some honking and going on with
We've been woken up at jackhammers for the last 3 days.
They're literally doing construction on the side of our building, and our apartment is up against that wall. So they're like jackhammering away underneath the building. It's like,
of course. Why not? You go from one extreme to the other, from penguins and solitude to jackhammers on the wall here.
Right. Why does anybody want to live in a city? That's what I keep asking myself.
Right. Exactly. And I think those are the kind of things that you're going to start thinking about. There are people. I remember going on a trip just throughout the country, and we stopped at some what I thought was a podunk place. I don't even remember what it was, in the middle of Wyoming or someplace. And we started talking to somebody, and I said, why did you move here? And I said, we used to live down there in the big city. You know, the big city had 10,000 people in it or something. And I said, why did you come out here? That's like nothing. It's like wind, you know, a little tumbleweed.
Starts to get too crowded.
Got too crowded. Yeah. I've been to Hawaii a couple of times, and people say, I used to live in California like you did. Got too crowded. Now I live in Hawaii. And, you know, so at what point is it too crowded? Was it too crowded in Antarctica? Do you have to go to the other side of the ice shelf where there's nobody? Do we all end up totally alone? You met some guy who lives up in a rose farm, an American who travels the world. Now he lives in a rose farm up in the mountains. That's about as far away as you can get.
Yeah. I feel like everybody has to make that decision because there are people who living on the same ice shelf 20 miles away would be too close. And I think because we are, because we've been in so many different places, even within our kids, I feel like there's that different level for them. I can feel like Jackson likes to be more distanced, a little bit further back. Then like Bradley likes to be surrounded by people more. So yeah, it's really fascinating. And then thinking like nature versus nurture, like how do kids figure that out? What they want.
Exactly. Well, that leads to the last part of the show here. Tips. What have we learned so far along the road here? Give us some mommy blogger tips. Give us some traveler tips here, or just give us some insights. We've talked about yourself, you know, okay, maybe we go at a slower pace. Maybe we have some base camps. Maybe we stay longer. Maybe we do it a different way this next season here. What have you learned?
Yeah, I know we've talked about in the past shedding the stuff and moving from materialistic to minimalist. And I don't know that we've mastered that, but we're definitely on that journey and recognizing that when we go back, there's a lot of stuff that we are going to leave there. So all of our souvenirs, because we've been slowly trading our U.S. goods for
souvenirs
because we only have the same amount of luggage.
And do we set up a museum somewhere in Apple Valley that has all the souvenirs?
Don't tell my mom, but I plan on hiding them in her attic.
She won't listen to the show. We'll be fine.
things that we thought we absolutely needed, like a drone. We bought a drone specifically to bring with us on the road. But either we're in a really popular location and they don't allow drones, or we're out in the middle of nowhere and the weather conditions aren't right, or we're too close to an airport and the drone won't allow itself to fly. Like, there's just so many things that make drone photography and videography so challenging that I think we realized it's easier for us to just go buy stock photography, video stock for like $5. And just put our faces at the beginning and the end of it, and you just get some B-roll to flesh out your videos when you need to. and they have the perfect weather conditions, yeah, and they have the permits with the city, and they have training on how to fly this thing in a way that it doesn't jerk and tilt and left and right. And
right.
So I think the drone, we probably,
I think we brought it. Yeah, we brought it as a business use item.
Right.
But I think instead it would just have to be a hobby, right? Like if you just enjoy flying the drones,
right,
and you want to get some footage just because you love flying them. Absolutely. There's a lot of beautiful things to see. You get a completely different perspective. The times that I have used it, it's been amazing. I mean, you can see so many more things. But at the same time, I mean, we've been carrying it around for seven months.
It's a hefty hobby. Like, yeah, it takes up a
hefty
lot of
hobby,
space,
yeah,
with all the drone paraphernalia and batteries and things that go with it. So, right.
And here's the question I always have about, here's the question, yeah, I always have about photography in general. And I've never come to an answer to this. Who's the photographer? There's always somebody in the family that's the photographer. You capture the picture, you take the stuff. That's Caitlin. Okay. And yet, I wonder, are they really enjoying it, or are they just the documentary crew following us, the real family, living, enjoying this? It would be nice to have a documentary crew who did all that, who got the light, who processed the stuff, who edited and did all this stuff together. I want to live it and be the star of the show. I don't know that I want to be filming my own experience,
yeah,
because now I'm not enjoying it. I'm watching it. I'm thinking about the light and everything else here.
Yeah, that's a really hard balance. And I think social media is one of those things that we've really had to wrestle with, because we had really grandiose visions when we started. And we did think about bringing a videographer with us. And I don't know that we've ruled that out. But just realizing that day-to-day living is a lot of work, right?
Yeah.
When we were back at home and you had like some autopilot available, you could start brainstorming and being creative and thinking. But most of the time we spend our days either desperately trying to catch up on school and work, or going out and seeing sights. And to your point, it's really hard to be in the moment experiencing it.
Exactly.
And also documenting it.
Exactly.
For sure.
Exactly. I've always wondered about that. I've always thought, that's why they have documentary crews and videographers and,
yeah,
and
yeah,
people chronicling this for you, so that you can stop. It becomes your life, and it's not just one set. Okay, I'm a reporter reporting in from a certain location here.
Yeah.
All right. So,
and I think one of the ways that we want to kind of try to work that in is finding a photographer / videographer on a like one day basis in a big city, right? So if we go to Thailand, if we stop in Bangkok for a week, one day in Bangkok, have somebody that follows around and videos us,
right,
and then they can take and cut that footage into a decent film for us. And I think that'll be a lot easier than trying to, because we have
so much equipment,
hundreds of hours of footage
hours
that we haven't done anything with, because we shot it all. So we know what it is, but hiring somebody to come and edit when we have that much footage, and then like, what are we going to cut it into? And there's just a lot of different pieces to that. But if we have a videographer who comes and shoots it and cuts it and gives us a final product for a day, it would cut out a lot of headache on our end.
So that's kind of hypothesis number two. Hypothesis number one, we're going to try using Thailand as a home base,
right,
and use it as like the hub and do spoke trips out to all the other Asian countries around it. Hypothesis number two is have scheduled shooting days where we have our adventures for that space booked, and we hire a film crew to follow us around that one day and then give us a 15-minute YouTube video that we can use. So I think that's going to be the second thing we're going to try. But also just during social media, after Antarctica, and that what the photographer told me, like, what's the one thing? I realized, you know what? I don't have to document everything equally. So I gave myself permission to just pick 5 photos a day. Like, just pick 5 things that you thought were interesting. The sunset, your dinner, right, the kids on the swings,
the
right,
penguin walking by. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And so I started, after Antarctica, I just started saying day number 145 or whatever day it was, and then a short title of kind of what I felt encapsulated that day, the 5 yeah, photos, and just a few sentences of why they meant something to me. And I realized that strategy felt so much lighter than me having to like plan ahead and schedule my media and make sure I'm on trend and make sure I have the right hashtags. And I know that there are people who can help with that, and we might get there eventually. But it was just giving myself permission to kind of say, what's the one thing today that I want to remember? And allowing myself to use that as sort of the filter to pick things out.
The other thing that I like about that is labeling each day, day number, whatever it was, 168, 192. I think we're at 215 now or close to there. But is that it allows us to go back in time too. So there was a long time before Antarctica that we didn't post a lot, right? So there was literally like 2 months where
we haven't even posted Antarctica photos yet.
Right. We just like gave up on social media because we were just running like crazy or sick. Right. As a dog in keto, like lots of different reasons.
And there was some perfectionism there. I was like, well, if it's not perfect, we're not doing it.
We're not going to post it. So it gives us the opportunity to go back and say, okay, we're on 215 now, but if we go back to day 45, we can post. Or even day number two, I was looking at photos of Yellowstone yesterday. I was like, oh my gosh, how did we not post more about Yellowstone? And so we can go back in time and remain true to our narrative by saying what day it was that we were in, we feel like. So it's a good way to do it.
So the two takeaways I heard is simplify this whole thing so that it can become sustainable. If you're trying to do too much every day, you're trying to film a movie, you're trying to capture everything, you're trying to run your business, you're trying to run a family, you're trying to run to the next thing, at some point you run out of gas, you run out of steam, and you've done that a couple of times here. To make this a sustainable life day in and day out, there's got to be a simpler process for moving, for shooting, for remembering, for surviving out on the road. I was struck by the other thing that the last family said, what do they call themselves? I forgot.
The Winging It family.
Winging It family, yes. Is that they're not winging it anymore. They have a process in place. and one of the things that struck me the most is one. I love this idea of one. You get one bag. You take one picture that capsulizes the whole day. You stay in one place for a while. One is kind of this mantra I heard them saying over and over and over again. Not 10 bags, 10 things, 10 shots, 10 things, 10 places, everything. Pick one. That's hard to do, but you want to do it all. I don't know if I'm ever going to be there again. I want to see it all, do it all, experience it all, shoot it all. Photograph it all, experience, go to every place, see everything, capture everything. Yeah. I got to do it in video and audio and this, and I got to do it all. Pick one. That's the one I keep hearing over and over again. What do you think?
Minimalism has never been something that Caitlin and I have traditionally been great at. And we're working on just bringing the levels of complexity down. We're not down to one yet, but instead of 100, we're down to maybe 10. we're definitely working on that.
Right. And I think that's the American dilemma. We're all living that life. Most of us we don't have one job anymore. We don't have one place to go. We have multiple gigs, multiple things, multiple layer upon layer, our business life, our social life, our kids' life. We're consumed with trying to live 4, 5, and 10 things all at once because you only do this once and we got to be here once. And everything. I think the people that survive out on the road, like the people that survive around the world, simplify everything down to one. Mm-hmm. So what's the one thing then that you would just react to it? I'll start with Michael first because Caitlin's usually more the philosopher of the group here. Michael, of anything, give me one of something, the one lesson learned, the one thing I remember, the one thing I won't do anymore, the one thing I can't wait to do. What's the one?
The one thing I can't wait to do when we get home is eat Mexican food.
Oh, my God. Seriously.
I know that sounds random, but like ever since we left Mexico, we've been sorely disappointed by the lack of Mexican food in the rest of South America.
And even in Mexico, because we're in the Yucatan Peninsula, it's not the Mexican food we grew up on. Like we're from like Southern California where you can get burritos the size of your head.
Like exactly. It used to be Mexico, so we know what we're talking about.
Exactly.
Just like northeastern Mexican food, like burritos, tacos, salsa, pico de gallo, and guacamole.
California Mexican food. That's what it is.
California Mexican food. I'm craving that.
I knew somebody went to Italy once, and they said, I want to go see real spaghetti, real pizza. There is no real spaghetti and pizza. We made this stuff up. Yeah. We made this stuff up. Yeah. American version of this stuff here. Okay, Caitlin.
What's your,
Don't think about it. Give me the one.
I think for me, the one thing that I have taken away is just quality time with the kids, right? When I was back at home and they were in school all day and I was working all day and we'd have some interactions, but we just have like so much snuggle time right now. That's Bradley's term, like snuggles all the time. And my daughter just wants to lay in bed and talk to me. And Jackson wants to show me what he's building on Minecraft. And I realized, like, this is what the whole point was. We said we were searching for our forever home. We wanted to show the kids the world, like all of these big grandiose dreams. What it really comes down to, the one thing that I would say this has taught me is that spending quality time with your kids is so precious, because no matter where you are in the world, that is such a sweet and short season.
Yes.
And we know that they're going to be teenagers and rolling their eyes at us any minute now. Right. And then they're going to be out of the house and we are going to have to call them if we want to have a conversation. But right now, like, they're so eager to hang out with us and they're so willing to like go to the park and just swing on swings. And like, I just feel just so blessed.
Oh my God. You're getting me choked up here too. That and is at the end, that's the one thing that really matters, that family, that connection.
Yeah.
And if you've just rediscovered that, then you've discovered something. You've discovered gold. Well, I'm going to leave it there. That's very touching and very real. And I think, wow, it's what it's all about. So join us, everybody, as we continue to find that one place that they want to call home, that one thing that they're going to learn that we can all relate to, and that one adventure that we just can't wait to hear as we follow this one family as they wander all over the map. Right here in Orange County's only community radio station, octalkradio.net. Streaming live from the University of California Irvine's Beal Applied Innovation Center.